Due to the graphic nature of the events at this haunted place, listener discretion is advised. This episode includes discussions of abuse and suicidal ideation. We advise extreme caution for listeners under 13. Everything's bigger in Texas! That's what Kyle had said to her when he booked the historic Jefferson Hotel for the final leg of their honeymoon road trip, over Natalie's objections. She had wanted something storied and romantic for the last night before they reached New Orleans. The dilapidated Victorian building by the river wasn't exactly going to do it. It has historic in the name, he countered. What's more storied than that? Historic apparently meant uneven water pressure, dirty mirrors, and a nightmare-inducing headboard over their bed. Over 12 feet tall of exceptionally dark wood, it loomed above, precariously curved over her head, as she lay staring up at the shadowy ceiling. Kyle slept beside her, snoring away. She turned to face the window, studying the waning crescent moon. Then, only inches from her face, she heard... Natalie sprang up in the bed, searching the dark room. But nothing moved. There was no sound, beyond Kyle snoring. She tried to calm herself and looked for the moon, but her heart raced, and the unearthly cat's cry rang in her ears. She lowered her head to the pillow, tracing the shadows on the ceiling, and straining to listen for the wind, hoping to forget what she'd heard. But still, the dark headboard loomed and leaned, and then it fell. Welcome to Haunted Places on the Parcast Network. I'm Greg Polson. Every Thursday, I take you to the scariest, eeriest, most haunted, real places on Earth. This week, join me on a supernatural journey to the historic Jefferson Hotel, a Texas Bayou Inn whose focus on restoration has brought spirits back for a visit, and discover why, to this day, it's haunted. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. And if you enjoy today's episode, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help. We also now have merchandise. Head to parcast.com/merch for more information. Listen to more episodes of Haunted Places, as well as Parcast's other podcasts on your favorite podcast directory. If you head northwest from Shreveport, Louisiana, all you'll see is bayou. Miles of cypresses lead you to Caddo Lake after you cross into Texas, and then on to the little town of Jefferson, less than 22 miles from the state line. This pre-Civil War town was one of the most important ports in Texas in the mid-19th century, but Jefferson has waned since its peak in the 1870s. The population now stands at just over 2,000 people. Built in 1851, the Jefferson Hotel is one of two surviving hotels in Jefferson that were built before the Civil War. Unlike its companion, the Excelsior Hotel, the Jefferson was closed for over 20 years during the mid-1900s before being restored and reopened. Memorabilia from the 19th century still covers the walls, and antique furniture in the lobby and rooms suggests that very little has changed since the first guest checked in. But it appears that some never checked out. These so-called non-paying guests are a source of fascination to the current visitors at the Jefferson, who can record their own ghostly experiences in a tome the staff has titled The Book of the Dead. flipping through the book provides an in-depth look at the three main spirits that guests encounter during their stays. There's a cowboy in a long duster with heavy boots who strolls the halls, and a group of mischievous children that predate the hotel itself. But most famous of all is a fallen bride, a ghost from the 1870s. While she's said to have died in room 14, the ornate headboard from her bridal suite has been moved to room 19, and she's moved right along with it. Elizabeth watched as the highwaymen rifled through her trunk. The ruffians smirked and chortled as their filthy hands grabbed her books, her decorative hairpins, her papers, her money, the last of her worldly possessions. They tied a rope around her horse and saddled up, waving their shotguns in the air as they galloped away. They left her clutching the only thing they didn't care to take, her handmade wedding gown, now dirtied and trampled in the silt of the bayou. Her betrothed had warned her there was no law in Jefferson. He warned her not to come until he could come and get her, but she was desperate. Her parents had told her that they couldn't afford to have a daughter anymore, especially one that tended to make the town talk with her interest in Beau Grant, an alleged abolitionist. He was well off and handsome, and open to the idea of her joining him in Jefferson. So she took it upon herself to meet him there. She trudged through the swamp road, her feet and skirt wet with mud, her wedding gown wet with tears. She could get it washed once she arrived at the hotel. Beau would marry her, and everything would be okay. She just had to keep walking. The sun set as her feet started to blister. Sweat clung to her brow, and the moist air made the forest seem claustrophobic. She just had to keep walking. Her heart skipped a beat when she saw a lamplight in the distance. She picked up her pace, leaving the swamp behind. Jefferson was dim and dingy, with unfriendly faces glaring at her from the shuttered windows. But Elizabeth carried on, knowing that her beloved could not be far away. She only needed directions, but most of the buildings seemed like dark homes or closed storefronts. Hotels, though, hotels were always open. She walked until she came across the Jefferson Hotel. The warm light streaming onto the street from its windows seemed particularly inviting. She entered the building and asked the person working the front desk where she could find Beau Grant. The desk worker nodded and held out a key. She shook her head, insisting that she meant to go to his home. The desk worker's eyes went wide, and he nodded even deeper. He gave her directions, pointing her a few blocks down the street. He told her it was the biggest house in town, and there was no way she could miss it. She thanked the worker and went back out into the night, cradling her wedding dress in her arms. All this suffering would soon be worth it. As she approached the massive house, three stories tall, with beautiful white walls and bright, shining windows, she began to shake with excitement. She knocked on the front door, but no one answered. She tried the handle, and the door opened at her push. She paused at the doorstep, wondering if she should intrude. But in the distance, she heard laughter. A woman laughing. No, several women laughing. Curious, she stepped inside. The large entry hall had several coat racks, covered with coats and hats. Too many coats and hats to belong to one man. Several pairs of shoes littered the ground. The laughing seemed to come from every direction. And now, in the home, she could hear softer sounds. The moaning sounds of lovemaking, all too familiar to her from her nights with Beau. Then, a door opened on the second floor. Down the stairs came Beau, buttoning the front flap of his pants as he did so. Flushed and hair tousled, glowing the way he always did after... Her stomach felt sick. He stopped when he saw her, swaying on his feet like he'd just walked out from the bottom of a bottle. He smiled and said her name. Elizabeth. He welcomed her to her new home, the Grant Bordello. Elizabeth held up her soiled wedding gown and asked him about the wedding. He laughed. There was no wedding. He had never promised her a wedding, only that she could be his girl. Her face drained of color as he finished walking down the steps. He grabbed her by the shoulders, breath reeking of alcohol. She started to cry, telling him about all that had happened. How she'd been kicked out of her home, robbed by ruthless brigands, forced to march through the swamp at night. And now, her fiancé informed her, it was all for naught. Beau grinned. He assured her it was not for nothing. In fact, she could start making him money tonight, if she just took a bath and washed off all that sweat and silt. He grasped her clothing and tore it off her shoulders. He told her she could bathe in the nude. She could work in the nude. She wouldn't need these rags anymore. Elizabeth pushed him back, tears falling from her eyes. He couldn't have her. Not like this. She clutched her wedding dress tight and ran back onto the street. He shouted at her as she fled, insisting she would be back. Insisting she had nowhere else to go. She struggled to keep covered, her torn clothing hanging off her as she raced back up the road. Surly townsfolk who had watched her from the windows shouted obscenities she had never heard before. Tears fell fast as the gloom of the night and the gloom of her circumstances set in. She could only think of one place to go. Elizabeth stumbled back to the Jefferson Hotel in a fog, her feet moving of their own accord. The desk worker looked at her as if he knew exactly what had happened, and his eyes looked at her torn clothing like a wolf on the prowl. He told her she'd be welcome to stay at his place, but she didn't like the look in his eyes. Instead, she said plainly, she would stay in Beau Grant's room. He nodded and handed her the key. She opened the door to room 14, a rather opulent room with a 12-foot-tall ornate headboard made of deep, dark wood. Her family didn't want her, but Beau's terms were untenable. She did not want to be thrown around like a rag doll at the mercy of a man's whims. She would never escape from this. Not after she'd given up everything for what she thought was love. Elizabeth wiped her tears on her torn clothing, then stripped down to her undergarments. Laboriously, she stepped into her wedding gown. Its previously off-white fabric, now thoroughly stained with the black and brown of Texas soil. The dress was covered with delicate embroidery, now muddled threads twirling about her bodice and feet. There were no pearls or other adornments. She'd wanted to show how expensive the low-end materials could look in the right hands. She looked into the mirror to examine her handiwork. She looked as beaten down and trampled as she felt. The rough road and dark events had left their mark, her eyes as desperate and hollow as her soul. She turned back toward the room, studying the large headboard. The dark wood loomed over everything else, making her feel very small. The same way Beau had stood over her, his drunken eyes staring down at her, his hands grasped tight on her shoulders. Her stomach churned, and she squeezed her eyes shut, trying to block out the memories of what had happened earlier. She would not let him win. He did not deserve her companionship, and she would not give it to him, or anyone else. She pulled the coverlet off Beau's hotel bed and stripped the sheets. She tied them together to form one long rope. Her body was found the next day. Beau had the hotel owners throw her in the swamp, thinking her not worth the cost of a funeral. But much like the odorous swamp gas, Elizabeth lingered. When Beau next brought a woman to room 14, the door would slam shut, and he would feel the cold grasp of a woman's hands tighten around his throat. There are several different tales of the Hanged Bride floating around. Some historians posit that she was a 15-year-old girl, pregnant and unable to bear the social pressure of having a child out of wedlock. There's even debate as to whether she was hanged from the bedpost or the light fixture in the room. Local history enthusiast and creator of the Jefferson Ghost Walk Tour, Jody Breckenridge, always believed the story to be more apocryphal than real. But in the year 2000, she found some potential historical basis for the famous Elizabeth. In 1912, one Lydia Grisby hung herself in her room at the Jefferson Hotel. According to a local newspaper, her fiancé let her know that he wouldn't be appearing for the wedding, and she went up to the honeymoon suite alone. She was never seen alive again. Whether you believe it's Elizabeth from the 1870s or Lydia from 1912, there is someone following that ornate headboard around the hotel. Room 19, the headboard's current home, is considered to be the Jeffersons' most haunted room. Unseen hands pull hair and hold bodies down. Water and lights turn on without warning. And perhaps most frightening, guests have heard groans and shakes so loud that they rattle the 12-foot antique headboard. We'll learn about the other ghosts of the Jefferson Hotel after this. And now, back to the story. As might be expected, with a hotel built in the 1850s, the Jefferson is difficult to maintain. The hotel was closed temporarily in the 1970s for restoration, and recently had to briefly close for extended maintenance. There are plumbing problems, and some of the claims of water turning on of its own accord can potentially be attributed to the uneven water pressure. But the building's age doesn't explain the scratching in the solid walls, or why animals have a strange tendency to destroy themselves at the Jefferson Hotel. Jasmine was supposed to be road tripping with her friends, but her mother had caught her in a lie. Instead of going on a church retreat, like Jasmine had claimed, Jasmine was actually planning to head to New Orleans. Now, Jasmine was stuck in Jefferson with no friends and nothing to do. Just another night in her hometown. But it didn't have to be. In fact, there was something she had always wanted to do. Jasmine snuck behind her mother's easy chair as she watched Johnny Carson, quietly making her way out the back door and to the corner of Vale and Austin Street. There, the storied Jefferson Hotel stood vacant, in what might have been a permanent state of restoration that looked more like stasis. She picked the lock easily. The door swung open to a dark and dusty lobby. Painter's tarps covered the furniture, but there were no paint cans in sight. Armed with nothing but a flashlight, Polaroid camera, and a paperback novel, she stepped across the threshold and up the creaky stairs, finding a room of her own for the night. She laid on the dust-covered bed, camera by her side, and Shirley Jackson's writing in her hands. The streets below her window were dark and quiet, and the building itself was strangely still. There was a bird making noise in the hallway, a soft cooing and the swish of flapping wings. She edged the door to the room open as quietly as she could, straining her ears for the location of the frightened creature. She poked her head out, looked left, looked right, listened for the wings again, or cooing. Some poor lost pigeon. But there was no sound, aside from her own shallow breath. She turned away from the door, leaving it open for reasons she couldn't quite explain. She shook her head and went back to her book. Then, something scratched against the floor. But this time it... No, they were in the room with her. She pointed her light at the warped floorboards near the door and watched as something invisible dug into the wood. Tiny, jagged scratches appeared, moving toward her at terrifying speed. Another set of scratches joined them, then another. She reared back, pulling her knees to her chest. The scratches carried forward. Then they stopped. The sound, the motion, all gone. She waited, not breathing. But nothing came beyond the foot of the bed. Slowly, she reached for the camera, aiming it at the last set of scratches. She couldn't bring herself to shake the Polaroid, holding it instead in two quivering fingers. She didn't breathe as the gray cloud in the white frame began to fade. But there was nothing. Just the faint outline of the grain of warped and well-trafficked wood. She looked down. The scratches were gone. She couldn't stifle her laugh. She sounded almost crazed, letting the tension out of her body with a strange giggle that left her lungs like sandpaper. Jasmine sat back down on the bed, leaning back with forced ease. She turned on her flashlight and returned to her book. The air was quiet. But she could have sworn she heard a woman crying and the swing of a rope. The scratching sound started again, below the floor this time, rather than above. She put the book down and glanced downwards, determined to stop whatever was causing this noise. She looked at the ground, willing her feet to find the source of the vibrations through the floor. She stepped quietly, following the sound. But they seemed to be moving, coming from everywhere and nowhere, switching from corner to corner with no logic. She backed onto the bed and raised her eye to the viewfinder again. Her finger pressed the shutter, and as if they knew she was listening, the noises stopped, leaving only the whirring of the camera and the Polaroid falling to the floor. The silence was heavy. The door slammed shut, daring her to get up. She flinched, holding the last bits of her courage as tightly as she held the still, cloudy photo. She moved quickly and quietly toward the door, her dog-eared book and flashlight still lying on the dusty bed. She turned the handle and yanked as hard as she could, but the door wouldn't open. Jasmine pulled until her palms were red, eventually backing away with a pathetic growl of frustration. The door swelled and shook on its hinges as something pushed from the other side, but still it held. Something skittered across her foot, but was gone before she looked down. Jasmine screamed. She pulled the door harder. It wouldn't give. She pulled with all her might, tumbling backward as the doorknob stood firm. She landed on the floor. She covered her ears with her hands and shut her eyes tight. She breathed deep, centering herself, and finally opened her eyes again. The flashlight had been left alone on the bed, its emaciated beam pointing uselessly up at the intricate ceiling as the horrible sounds suddenly stopped. Dust motes danced in the cruel white light, and she could hear the lost bird again in the ceiling just above her head, muffled, cooing, trying to soothe itself. Dust fell more quickly now, creating a fast-growing pile on the bed. A piece of plaster hit the bed with a heavy clunk. She coughed as the dust enveloped her. Then the birds broke through, cascading in an amorphous wave of feathers and beaks and broken wings. They shrieked as they fell from the hole in the ceiling, desperately trying to take flight, to somehow escape the prison of the hotel's walls. They slammed into her as they flailed in still air, beaks pecking and feet scratching in their attempts at freedom. Jasmine ducked low, desperately trying to escape. She gave one last pull on the door, and it finally gave way. She raced down the stairs and bolted for the front porch. The birds came with her, sharp nails and razor mouths, still nipping and screaming. She pulled open the heavy antique door and burst into the cool night, throwing herself to the side of the door as the birds flew out behind her, leaving a downy layer of feathers and blood on the floor of the lobby. Jasmine walked home, her arms wrapped tightly around herself, averting her eyes from the hundreds of birds that watched, from the lampposts and power lines, the roofs of houses, and the gate of the cemetery. Old buildings are good places to nest. Their walls are porous, and the insulation used in modern construction are often absent or obsolete. A litter of baby raccoons or one lost bird in the walls wouldn't be particularly remarkable in isolation. Animals find shelter where they can. But a guest at the Jefferson reported that as they checked in, the hotel staff informed them that a bird had pecked through the wall in the bathroom. The front desk assured them that all had been handled and the wall had just been patched, but would be wet for the next hour. You must imagine their shock when they opened the bathroom door to find an 8-inch pile of feathers and insulation sitting in their tub beside a new gaping hole. They heard a shifting in the wall and the caw of a raven outside, and quickly decided to find other accommodations. We'll finish our tour of the Jefferson Hotel after this. And now, back to the story. There were a number of unsolved murders and fires in 19th century Jefferson, and the transitory nature of the port meant that ill-intentioned people could disappear at will, taking a sloop into the bayou to parts unknown, never to be seen again. This rowdy environment is often cited as the common explanation for the town's frequent spectral sightings, as every historical building has its own non-paying guests. This spectral population has helped Jefferson earn the title of the most haunted town in Texas. Jefferson's other claim to fame is its Mardi Gras celebrations. Led by the crew of Hebe, Jefferson's Mardi Gras is still small in scale. But if New Orleans feels a bit intimidating, Jefferson is a great place for training wheels. There's a masquerade ball to start off the season, followed by several different parades, including separate ones for children, pets, and motorcycles. Luckily, the parades occur during the day. You never know who's behind that mask at night. Claude had decided he was going to be responsible this year. A smaller Mardi Gras, more family-friendly. Well, he hadn't decided that part. His best friend's fiancé had decided that for them. He didn't understand the point of a bachelor party upriver when New Orleans was right there. But he wasn't the one getting married, and he loved Louis like a brother. The Jefferson Hotel only had 3 rooms available for 6 men, but they didn't plan on sleeping. Parades in the morning, drinking for the evening, and potentially some ghostly experiences at night. Perhaps he should have been troubled by the staff's warning that they wouldn't be staying past 5 p.m. But the partier in him knew that would mean less noise complaints. The explanation of the massive headboard in their room was a little harder to shake. The housekeeper had smiled in that wry but kind Gulf Coast way. "People say you can't hang yourself from the headboard of a bed," she said, referring to the popular local legend of the jilted bride. "You can if it's 12 feet tall." And off she trundled, cleaning supplies in tow. Louis seemed untroubled, though, so the guys hit a saloon, and then a Dairy Queen. They stumbled home around 1 a.m., which was actually very conservative for Claude. Louis had fallen into bed while Claude did his usual sobering up routine, a very brief cold shower, quickly followed by a hot bath. The cold was always tough to bear, but he was interested in seeing a ghost tonight, so he wanted to be somewhat awake. The tub filled, slowly but surely. Inviting water, steaming as Claude tried to choose between a pine bath bomb or a candy one. He decided he deserved something sweet and threw the candy one in. The steam rose in comforting wafts, easing the tension in his face as well as his muscles. He studied the soft film of water vapor that had fixed itself to the walls, took a deep breath, and slid under the bubbles, eyes closed. It was peaceful down there. The only sound was the almost imperceptible gurgle of the drain, pulling ever so slightly. Then something grabbed his leg and pulled, hard. So hard that the soles of his feet swelled as they crashed against the end of the tub. He pushed upwards quickly, breaking the surface of the bubbled water with his eyes open. His eyes stung. He closed them quickly and reached for a towel, blotting them as gently as he could. The burning subsided, and he opened his eyes, blinking at the too bright light. He was just tired, that's all. And tired people shouldn't take baths. The mirror was fogged up. Well, every surface, really. Claude decided it was time to drain the bath and let the steam dissipate. He wrapped a towel around his waist and stepped to the mirror to retrieve his glasses from the sink. He brought the thick frames to his face and took a deep breath as the world came into focus. There was writing there. Soft, round letters, as if drawn by a child's hand. "Breathe," it read. Reflective letters framed by fog. It had to be a joke. Louis was likely in the next room pretending to be asleep, his frame shaking with stifled laughs. Claude made his way to Louis as quietly as possible, preparing to get him back for the scare. But Louis was asleep. Or at least he was very good at pretending to be. Claude shook him. No response. He shook him again. No response. "Louis!" Claude whisper yelled at him. His friend finally opened his eyes, disoriented. Claude was expecting Louis to admit to the joke and laugh, but the groom-to-be only looked confused. Claude dragged Louis over to the mirror to prove his point. The fog was fading now, but Louis was at least willing to acknowledge that the swiftly disappearing letters appeared to read, "Breathe." Louis yawned and asked Claude if he could go back to bed. "Fine, fine," Claude muttered, still wondering if he'd been had. But they both saw it. The sheets were moving by themselves, writhing on the bed with an unnatural litheness, quick and reptilian. The two men stood frozen as the sheets began to smooth and bunch again, as if someone was grasping at the fabric, trying to claw their way off the bed. The imprints of the nails curled back, desperate. The outlines of legs appeared, two pairs, rolling and resisting as the larger pinned the smaller and began dragging them off the bed and toward the men. The room filled with screaming, a deafening cry of desperation, pleading in words they couldn't understand. They couldn't see the woman's face or understand her protests, but they knew exactly what she was trying to escape. Claude and Louis didn't know what to do. Louis put his hand on his friend's shoulder, backing up as far out of the room as they could. They waited, breathless, for 30 seconds. Then 45. 60. 2 minutes. 5. What felt like forever. But no one came. Claude stuck his head out first, scanning the dark room with his spectacled eyes. There was nothing. Just the usual furnishings, the gaudy wallpaper, and that looming headboard. Louis stuck his head out next to Claude. Whatever or whoever had been screaming was gone. The two men studied the room together, checked that the window was closed, that the door was locked. Nothing was amiss. They stood there a long time, waiting for each other to say something, to make some sense of the trauma they had just witnessed, helpless to intervene or understand. Then Louis looked down, shock on his face. "Dude," he said, "you brought bath bombs and didn't tell me?" A lot of activity in the Jefferson Hotel seems to begin in the bathrooms, from ghostly messages in fogged-up mirrors to gentle tugs in clear bathwater. It isn't just the water pressure at the hotel that's unpredictable. There's a particularly disturbing urban legend about a young woman with slit wrists languishing in room 19's bathtub for 2 days before expiring. But whether or not this death actually occurred is lost to history. Many members of the hotel staff have their own ghost stories to share. One of the former managers remembers switchboards lighting up when the hotel is empty, things falling when no one was around, and electronics turning on and off on their own. As helpful as they might be during business hours, the Jefferson staff leave the hotel by 5 p.m. as a way to make sure they avoid the worst the supernatural has to offer. The Texas investigators of the paranormal and supernatural have ruled the Jefferson Hotel to be free of ghosts and debunked some of the most common supernatural experiences, particularly the water turning on and off on its own. But it hasn't stopped visitors from continuing to fill the pages of the Book of the Dead with their own experiences. Like much of Jefferson itself, the Jefferson Hotel is living history in more ways than one. Its small-town charm means that tourism is a necessary source of income, and the town's popular ghost tour is the first stop for many visitors. With so much attention on the past, it isn't surprising that guests see and hear things in the night. But it's hard to discount the dead's experience in all of this, too. In a 19th century, rough-and-tumble riverside port town in East Texas, surrounded by bayou and little else, it's easy to be swallowed up by the push of people at the docks or the churn of the water as it moves through the wheels of the steamboats. No one comes looking for you, because no one cares. Both Jefferson, Texas, and the Jefferson Hotel have decided to care. They dig up new stories, trying to find a name for every spirit that crosses their path. They are so very eager to listen. Should we be surprised, then, if the ghosts are eager to talk? Thanks again for tuning into Haunted Places. We'll be back Thursday with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Haunted Places, as well as all of Parcast's other podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or your favorite podcast directory. Several of you have asked how to help us. If you enjoy the show, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. I'll see you next time. Haunted Places was created by Max Cutler. It's a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It's produced by Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. I'm Greg Polson.